Hare Krishna, dear Vaishnavas. Hare Krishna. On this day when we remember Raghunath Das Goswami, let us remember what he was famous for. Turn to the person sitting next to you and say, please accept my humble obeisances. And mean it. Be very, very humble when you do it. Raghunath Das Goswami used to offer humble obeisances with humility, not ritual, to 2,000 Vaishnavas every day. 2,000 Vaishnavas. His difficulty was that he was so humble, everybody wanted to come and see him. That's a problem. Because when everybody wants to come and see you, and you're famous for your humility, and it's genuine, you must bow down. You must bow down. 2,000 Vaishnavas a day. This was his... It wasn't that he was counting, but other people were counting. So today we come together on a beautiful Sunday morning in England to remember three devotees who were very staunch devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why do we remember them? Because in our life, the company of the Vaishnavas is all we have. Really, the company of the Vaishnavas is all we have. They are the only friends we will ever have on our journey back to Godhead. Don't be mistaken that the Vaishnavas probably is the ones that Krishna has given you to associate with. These will be the ones that you keep with you till your dying day. And it's very important on your dying day to have someone who loves you around the bed, presumably, who will sing Hare Krishna in your ear. You cannot manufacture it. You cannot organize it. It's very difficult to organize in religions anyway. But you can't organize who will be there on your dying day. So now it's very important to make friends with the people that you see around you so that at least they will be there. Some may come, some may go, but you will have some close friends in Krishna consciousness who will tell you what you need to hear at the right time, and they will be there for you. And we should aspire to have those. One time there was a little Buddhist story. There was a disciple of the Buddha, and he said, I think association with the fellow monks is at least 50% of my method of advancing towards nirvana. And the Buddha said to him, don't speak nonsense. Don't speak nonsense. It is everything. There is everything. Therefore, we have this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It is the International Society for systematically propagating and spreading Krishna consciousness. But that means nothing if you're not doing it. Yeah? We're an international organization for doing something. Do you do it? No. Oh, then we might have problems. We're an international society for collecting postage stamps. Do you collect postage stamps? Well, no, but that's beside the point. I'm a member of this organization that's telling everybody else that they should collect postage stamps. It doesn't work like that. I mean, you can only be an international society if you're doing the thing that you're meant to be doing. Okay? So these five most potent activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu out of the list of 64. If you take all the shastras, you come up with a list of 64 items of devotional service. Why 64? Why not 65 or 63? Well, 64 is a good number to remember. That would make more sense in the days when there was 12 pence in the pound, let me tell you. When we didn't believe that everything good came in tens. Okay? Now everybody thinks, okay, 10 toes, 10 pence, okay, 10, 10, 10, 10. But if you go to 12 or you go to different numerals, easier to remember, more of a human connection. Anyway, so out of a list of 64, five most potent, what are they? Number one. What? The names of Krishna. Then? Sadhu Sangha. Then? Bhagavat Shravan, listening to the Bhagavatam. Then? Murti Seva, and then Maturavas. Yeah. These five, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if you do any of these five, they will lead to Krishna consciousness in a very short time. Put your hand up if you like to be Krishna conscious in a very short time. Yes, me too. Me too. Often, often we know it, don't we? We know these things, and we have 24 hours a day in which to do these things. We've heard all about these things. But we do it just enough to be a religious person, but not enough to be a Krishna conscious person. And that's the difference. Sometimes it's not what you're doing that's wrong. It's that you don't do it enough. Okay? You're doing everything right. We just need to do more of it. Just more of it. You know? It's like someone saying, it's like, I came back from America a couple of nights ago. You know what it's like when you have jet lag? 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm still, you know, up and about. What's happening in the world? Well, what's happening in the world? This is 2 o'clock in the morning. So 2 o'clock in the morning, I wanted to be busy, busy, busy. You know, I like to unpack my suitcase. And I said, 2 o'clock in the morning, I don't mind. I'm on American time. I'll do my washing. Do my washing. So I pulled all my laundry out. I opened the washing machine without checking. And at least two buckets of water cascaded out of the washing machine. I hadn't checked. The last cycle had not removed all the washing. So the water, because I've been away for 2 weeks, the dirty water was there for 2 weeks, and it smelled like bad vegetables. And it was all over the kitchen floor, 2 o'clock in the morning. So there I was trying to mop up. Now, if someone had come to me, certainly if my wife had come to me and said, did you clean up the mess? And I said, well, I got a cup and I took a cup and I threw the cup away. She would have said, you fool. Why didn't you remove all the water? Now the kitchen floor is going to be irreparably damaged. You see, the object is to remove all the dirty water in the kitchen. Okay. You're doing the right thing by using a teacup. But if you have one or two teacups, it's not going to make much of a dent. So the devotees that we're going to read about today, they're famous because they did these five things, but they did them to a superlative degree. They did them to a degree which we can only offer our pranams to. We can't emulate, but we can offer our humble obeisances to. That's why we read about them. Yes, there is a problem of sometimes as devotees, we have a problem of trying to do too much too soon. Okay, so I stayed up till 4 o'clock in the morning. I was meant to offer the arati to the deities here. I didn't make it. Okay? This is a hypothetical. This is not the real me talking. but we require balance in our spiritual life. But the general principle is, if it's good, and it's healthy, and it's helping you, and it's spiritual, and it's approved, and it's genuine bhakti as authorized by Rupa Goswami, do it, and do more of it. And the reason you don't do more of it, the reason I don't do more of it, is because there's a resistance, you know. So the mantra is Om, but also the word for resistance is Om. In an electrical circuit, it's Om. So your spiritual life, work with me, okay, work with me. So you can also have resistance in your spiritual life, and the resistance is caused by the bodily concept of life. It doesn't go away as soon as you intellectually understand it. I think, yeah, I can understand that. Why is he talking about that? I know that already. Give Kripa Moy the cushion and he'll say things that I know already. What's the point? So we are meant to, the word in the Bhagavad Gita 4:34 is pariprashna. Pariprashna. Prashna means questions. Pari means all around. Ask questions all around the subject. Pari, we get the word pari, perimeter. Perimeter. You know, perimeter means all around something. So pari also in Sanskrit means the same thing. All around. Ask a question from this side, this side, this side. What about if this? How come this? Why don't we do this? What if this happens? What do I do when that happens? You know, it's all around. Don't be satisfied with glib answers. Glib answers is easy. That's called religion. And then when you don't get any answer, that's called, you know, the mystique of religion. You go to the priest, you go to the rabbi, and they say, my wife was looking for just a little crumb of hope many years ago, 20 years ago or something. Her mother died in Canada. She went to the funeral. The rabbi conducted the funeral. And she said, Rabbi, she said, what happens to the soul after death? And he said, 100 different rabbis, 100 different answers. Which is very comforting, really, isn't it? It's really comforting for someone to hear. Now, the point is that we... So you go to a Catholic priest and they say, well, it's a mystery. It's a mystery. It's a divine mystery. Well, that's all right, but can we have some solutions? Some I really need to know. So the Krishna consciousness movement is for the people that want to know. But don't be satisfied by glib answers. We have to keep going. Ask another question and ask the same question to a different person. Ask a different question to the same person, and it'll always stay fresh. As soon as Krishna consciousness or the discussion becomes unfresh, becomes stale, then you know you're on, you know, it's a difficult territory. Because really you should be asking, let's do it from a fresh point of view. Let's get a fresh perspective here. See? So there was just a conference. There was three conferences in America just while I was there. I could only go to one. So of course I went to the men's retreat at New Vrindavan. Okay, let's be gender specific here. I went to the men's retreat. There was a woman's retreat on in Los Angeles, so I went to the men's retreat at New Vrindavan. From New York, it's an 8-hour journey, an 8-hour drive. I didn't know you could drive a car for 8 hours and still be in the same country. You know, I'm like the frog sitting at the bottom of the well. You know, he thinks, is America bigger than England? How many more times bigger than England is America? Well, it's so big. It is so big. And the roads just keep on going. Long, long, straight roads. Not really much to look at except beautiful scenery, but you just want to get to your destination. So that was the men's retreat. So there were specific issues to men's issues. Because we us men, I'm directing, ladies, I'm directing my gaze over here. We have some men's issues, and they need to be discussed. Men and Krishna consciousness. It's not all the same. Then, I cast my gaze over here, we have ladies' issues. What is it like for a woman in Krishna consciousness? Don't tell me now, but you can all talk to me later. So there are certain issues that need to be discussed. Then, I was staying with these devotees, and you know, the husband was a bank manager, okay, and the Indian couple. So she was making me paratha, potato paratha, cauliflower paratha for breakfast one morning. I said, so Mataji, what do you do? I don't know. So she said, Prabhuji, Prabhuji, I work in science. Okay, so what do you do? She said, I'm an astrophysicist. As she turned the paratha over. Okay, conceptions smashed. So I'm an astrophysicist. Okay, interesting. And what's your speciality? Oh, Prabhuji, I work in black holes. I said, well, who do you work for? She said, I work for the National Aeronautical Space Administration, NASA. I said, oh, okay, right. Prabhuji, what do you do? I give talks at Bhaktivedanta Manor occasionally. So men, be warned, there's a new future coming. Okay, you may be married to an astrophysicist. So there was a conference. There's a conference of scientists coming up in January. Because we have to ask the question, what's it like to be a scientist in Krishna consciousness? How do you rationalize the fifth canto with everything that you've learned in astrophysics? And apart from that, how do you present it to the world in one of the biggest temples in Asia, namely the temple of the Vedic Planetarium. Have we got that sorted out yet? We could either become a laughing stock of the world, or everybody could say, as they do in India, wow, wow, wow. Well, very interesting, very interesting. So our devotees who are scientists, they're a little bit concerned about this. Because we have devotees who are, you know, you could say literalists, if you want to use a modern term, biblical literalists, you know. We take the Shastra, but it's how you understand it. If you don't understand it, this will be a permanent block on your faith. So it needs to be understood. So what's it like for a scientist in Krishna consciousness? What's it like for a woman? What's it like for a man? What's it like for a child? What's it like for an elderly person? What's it like for a person who comes from the Jewish background? What's it like for a person who comes from the Christian background? We have a perennial difficulty in those of us, including myself, who come from the Judeo-Christian, or now also including the Islamic. People are now coming to Krishna consciousness from the Islamic background. We don't talk about it much, but there's hundreds of people. I've given classes, you know, on Skype to certain Middle Eastern countries, and they're not all people from India working in IT. They're people from that area, okay, who are under penalty of jail and sometimes death if they study the Bhagavatam. What's it like for them in Krishna consciousness? You see? So everybody has to ask questions sufficiently to get the answer that they need to put Krishna consciousness into action in their life. Okay? What's it like for a young person coming and listening to an old guy like me talk about Krishna consciousness? Okay? I just spent some time in New York where my son-in-law and daughter now live. Just had a... Well, my first grandchild. Hooray! And, yeah, Harry Ball. And, very cute, cute little thing. And, in New York, there is, you know, people who are studying the, a lot of people who make up the, there's two types of people in New York, it seems. People who have come through straight edge, you know, who are turned on by that whole era. When was it? Early 80s, late 80s? Late 80s through the 90s. There was a, for those of you not from, who don't understand that term, it's young people who eschewed alcohol and intoxication and listened to incredibly loud and very physical music. But because some of the devotees, you know what I'm talking about, eh? And who sometimes dived off the stage into the crowd and enjoyed. So this music was a protest against some aspects of suburban life, or metropolitan life, we should say, because it's essentially a, you know, a metropolitan phenomenon. And it spread widely across certain parts of America. And because some of the leaders were influenced by Krishna consciousness, the lyrics to their songs and what they presented to the world was Krishna conscious. Hundreds of people who are still practicing devotees to this day came from that very energetic, very dynamic, but they had to reshape it almost in their own way so that the philosophy of the Bhagavatam made sense to them. Therefore, they had to have their questions answered in a way that would satisfy them. And I think it's a very interesting phenomenon. The opposite end of that spectrum are people who would not even remotely consider diving off a stage. They are people who... Can somebody tall open that door for them? Someone who's... Yeah, someone tall. There you go. Don't get dizzy. Look at that. Very good. So, the other end of the spectrum is the people who are... The first time they hear about Ishvara is in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, because they're practicing yoga, Hatha Yoga, and they want to teach their students. So many yoga teachers are coming now to attend kirtan, because kirtan is the next progression after You know, you're a yoga teacher, you have to have something to say about Ishwara Pranidhan. And people are coming to us and other organizations, of course. We have, there's another yoga organization that takes their group to Vrindavan, and they hear for a week, they hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Srivatsa Goswami of the Radharaman Temple. And it's the people are perceiving it as the next step. So we've got different types of people who really want to access Krishna consciousness. And all I'm saying is that for them and for you, you have to make it relevant to yourself. Otherwise, if it's irrelevant and inaccessible, and you continue getting answers that challenge you or don't satisfy you, then you're doing something wrong. You either have to ask the same question to a different person or a different question to the same person. You have to do pariprashna. And in order to do pariprashna, you'll have to have a sufficient number of devotees to do that with. That's why we group together in Sangha. One of the big things that's happening in New York is that they're starting what they call, what we would call Bhakti Vriksha or Sanghas, they call them community groups. Everything from the New York Bhakti Center is in English. Isn't that refreshing? The language of the country that we live in. So community groups. And it's really for support and encouragement, guidance, and mutual study. And the way it works is devotees join together with devotees that they like. You know, revolutionary concept there. You join together with people that you get on with, and you do your pariprashna in their association. Okay. Hare Krishna. So I wanted to say something about Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami is a... If you know this prayer, you can join in. He chants it, I believe, in thanking his gurus about everything that they have given him. And it goes like this. Let me remember. Nama sheshtam anamapi sachiputram atra sorupam rupam tasya grajam urupurim maturim goshtavatim Sri Radha Kundam Giribaram Aho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurung Tang Natosmi. So in this one verse, he summarizes all the things that he's grateful for. Sometimes we practice gratitude, don't we? So he's practicing gratitude. So one time someone came to me and he said, he'd been spirited away by one of the bowels of Bengal. Bowels is not just your intestines. Bowels is they're very good singers, and they're one of the Sahaja groups prominent in Bengal and Bangladesh. Much less Bangladesh now. Hindu population of Bangladesh has decreased. So we have the bowels of West Bengal, let's say. So he'd been spirited away. And the topic came to how in Krishna consciousness we follow the six Goswamis. And he said, why only six? He said, there's so many Goswamis. So many Goswamis. There's Goswamis all over India. He said, why can't we follow more? And of course, the discussion proceeded from that point onwards. But our Goswamis, upon whom this movement is based, have, what's our verse, is Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipuno Sadharma Sangstapako. Why did they do that? Why did they take the Shastras and provide us with the relevant? Because Lokanam Itakarano Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanya Karo. So they could give the people shelter. For this reason, Vishnu Purana says, Srila Vyasadeva takes the Veda and first divides it so it's manageable, because it has to be now channeled in human society. Having the Vedas in human society without humans is an intractable solution. It's not, you know, you need human beings. Human beings have got memories. They've got printing machines now, but they've also got memories. The difficulty now is that memory is being consigned to history. And one philosopher in America, he was speaking about this. He said that now instead of trying to memorize things, we use our phone and we take a picture, isn't it? We take a picture, or we say, I don't need to remember it because everything's on Google. Which means the human capacity for memorization, and from memorization will come, what's the word? When you're... Recall. Thank you. Recall. Memorization and recall will be severely diminished. The whole point is that the Vedas are there to be recited, memorized, and recalled, and employed in transcendental awakening. That's the whole point. So the United Nations, 2 years ago, they just labeled Vedic chanting as one of the intangible legacies of mankind. That's their way of saying that it was really, really important. So just like pandas are protected, right? And the Great Wall of China is protected. So the Vedic chanting is protected. So there's funding now going to the Pathashalas or the Gurukulas, where young boys predominantly are being trained to chant the Vedas. Because, you know, according to historians, this chanting goes back to the Bronze Age, which means that it's one of the oldest monuments, if you like, of human civilization, therefore to be protected. The Bronze Age is quite recent compared to how we calculate history. So our six Goswamis, they took Vedic literature, Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, and the Bhashyas of Vedanta Sutra, the Pancharatra, which means how to worship. Why do we throw petals on the Guru's feet? Why do we take Charanamrita? Why do we bow down this way with this shoulder and the other way with the other shoulder? And why do we touch feet? Why do we wear tilak? This is all Pancharatra. This is all Pancharatra. And it was taught by different persons who were taught it by Lord Narayan. So that is also channeled down. And the six Goswamis have each taken personal responsibility for each of these things. And if you look at them, Gopal Bhatta and Sanatan, shoot back to me what they protected, what they preserved. Gopal Bhatta and Sanatan. Haribhakti Vilas, the code book for being a Vaishnava in the world. Raghunath Das Goswami. Yeah, renunciation, Prayojana, yes. Raghunath Bhatta. We're going to hear about him anyway. Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami, what's he famous for? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that's right. Yeah. I'm asking. I'm Pariprashna. So let's hear about them. So Raghunath Das Goswami was actually the first. He was born in 1494. He was actually the first person to meet Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was born 2 miles from a place called Saptagram, which is quite close to another place that features in his life later on, a place known as Panihati. If you go into the Prasadam room, you'll see a painting on the wall. That's a picture of Panihati. It's a little grove of banyan trees down by the Ganga. And it's 4 miles north of Calcutta, present-day Calcutta. So you can do it in a day. You can go the taxi ride. You can go to Saptagram if you're living in Calcutta. You can go out to Saptagram, Panihati, and you can see Lord Nityananda's house, which is just around the corner. And just around the corner from there is... did the bags for Lord Chaitanya, Sister Raga, Damayanti, that's right. Brother? Damayanti's brother? Raghu. Raghava Pandit, yes. I knew that. So he was born in that area, in the present-day district of Hooghly, And he was the son of Govardhan Majumdar, who was the brother of Hiranya. And he was Hiranya by name, but not Hiranyakashipu. They were good people, but they had lots of gold. And they were what we call, what we would call today, a multimillionaire. They were landowners. And the way it worked under the Muslim occupational government is that if they thought that they could work with you, they would let you have the land, and you would pay 50% tax on the land. That's a lot, isn't it? For all you taxpayers, 50% tax. So 50% of your profit, 50% of your profit all goes to the local government if they think that you're a good administrator. So, of course, he was the famous Nawab Hussein Shah. Now, they weren't just anybody. They were close friends with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mother and father. Mother's father, Nilambar Chakravarti. So close that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called Nilambar Chakravarti uncle. And Raghunath was the only child. His childhood guru was Balaram Acharya. And Balaram Acharya, see, we have connections here, folks. Balaram Acharya was friendly with none other than Haridas Thakur. You see? So immediately in his childhood, Raghunath Das Goswami is having this influence from Balaram Acharya. And Raghunath met him. And such was the accumulation of a desire to meet Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who he'd heard about from Haridas and Balaram and others, that at 15 he ran away to meet Lord Chaitanya. And this is, you know, we shouldn't imagine that this is something, you know, artificial, or we shouldn't put a sort of a ordinary spin on it. When we talk of Raghunath Das Goswami and other Goswamis, we're actually talking of eternal associates of Krishna. So when Krishna and Radha combined, come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the gopis and the manjaris, they like to be with them. So there's an almost almost impossibly powerful connection between Raghunath Das and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I want to see him. I need to see him. I've got to see him. And I will do anything in my power to get there. So he runs away. And this is after Lord Chaitanya's tour of India has finished. And he meets Rupa and Sanatan at Ramakali. And then Raghunath came to meet him in Shantipur at Advaita's house. Now, previous to this, Raghunath, age 9, had met with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He'd met him. So, am I right? Or am I getting it wrong? The right story? Okay. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Life is too short for me to make mistakes and then compound them by telling all of you. So, Raghunath came to meet Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Shantipur, which is, for a 15-year-old boy walking, it's a good distance. Even today, it's a good taxi ride from out that way. A couple of hours, isn't it? And his father sent soldiers to bring him back. This was the position of Govardhan Majumdar. He was powerful enough to have his own soldiers. You see, in those days, there's no such thing as a police force and an army. You know, if you're powerful, you get to have your own police and your own army. Whoever pays them gets them. Just like now, the government doesn't have enough money to pay police. And there's chaos in the streets of this country. Just absolute chaos we have because the government doesn't have enough money to pay police to keep the peace. So when you have enough money, you can buy your own police force. Okay. So this is Govardhan Majumdar. He's so big that he keeps his, you know. Here's the difficulty, and this is going to be a difficulty for him later on. He was making 1,500,000 rupees 500 years ago per year on the land that he had. But he looked after it so well that he started to make 2 million rupees a year. but he was only paying 50% of the tax on the 1,500,000. Do you see what's going on? So in effect, he wasn't giving enough tax, but he thought that he was being good tax, you know, what's it called? Good tax management, not tax evasion, but tax avoidance. Yeah. So he thought, you know, Indian businessman, he thought, okay, let me do it this way, which was going to prove problematic for him later on. So just hold on to that thought. So here we have Raghunath at age 19. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has told him, go home, stay with your parents, be a good boy, do what they tell you, and later on we'll see. So at 19, he went to see Lord Chaitanya. And then his father sent soldiers. So after 6 days, Lord Chaitanya sent him home and told him to become married. How is that possible? Why is a sannyasi telling a young boy to get married? I thought in Krishna consciousness we weren't supposed to get married. Did you? Why did you think that? So here's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu giving him instructions. No, go home, get married. So he did. If Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave you a personal instruction, what would you do? Okay? You'd carry that out as much as possible, wouldn't it? Isn't it? Temple commander gives you an instruction. You just walk on by. That's why they're called temple commanders, folks. You know what the word command means? He's not called the temple, ask everybody politely. Or the temple humble requester. He's called the temple commander. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness should be run with militaristic discipline. You're told something and you do it. Okay, can I be an old man now? I'll be an old man, I'll say, that's the way I was trained, that's the way you do it. Guru tells you, forget temple president, temple commander tells you, clean this up. Yes, Prabhu. My friend went to a Christian monastery in Ireland, and he saw the abbot of the monastery walking around, and the abbot of the monastery called for someone to get something for this devotee, because he was staying there for a few nights, you know, and he was his guest, and he wanted to look after him. And then he called down the corridor, you know, Brother Thomas, and Thomas came running. And as Thomas came running, he bowed to the abbot like this. Not a dandavat, but and the word he said was, yes, my lord. This is a Christian monk in a Christian monastery, how he addresses the abbot of the monastery. Yes, my lord, what can I do? And so my friend, a devotee friend, who said, this is amazing, what humility they're cultivating here. See, humility doesn't mean weakness. Humility means strength. If that sounds like something from 1984, I apologize. Humility is strength. But this is our prize jewel. Prize jewel. You know. Someone told me a story from New Vrindavan. And Prabhupada was walking around his palace that they'd made for him. You know, the house on the top of the hill is palatial, all marble, crystal, stained glass windows. And, you know, they're wondering, should we set gems in the walls? And they asked Prabhupada while he was walking around, should we set gems into the walls, Prabhupada? You know, they wanted to make it what they'd read about in Prabhupada's books. And he looked at the devotees that were following him, and he smiled and he said, my disciples are my gems. But the gem of the gem-like disciples is their humility. That's the gem of a devotee, you see. And rather than being a sign of weakness to bow down to others, it's a sign of great strength. It works very well in Japan. My nephew is in Japan. He's learned to speak Japanese and read and write Japanese. He just went over there to teach English, and now he's Japanese himself. He's living there. He's not coming back. And he said his Japanese culture is wonderful. He said, I've learned how to bow. 99% of our advancement is made by paying obeisances. I forget who said that. And 89% of all the quotes given by senior Vaishnavas are unsubstantiated by chapter and verse or direct references. I'm kidding. And 75% of statistics are completely wrong. So, but humility, we've heard it a lot, means to become humble. Old story of the samurai warrior, he'd gone rogue, and he was crashing through the jungle, came into a clearing, and he said, "Give me some food, give me some water, or I'll cut you." And he showed them his sword. And he said, "Who's the head here?" "Oh, we have a Buddhist monk. He's the head of our village." He said, "Bring him here." Okay, he's a bit of a loud mouth, you know. We call him a hooligan. "Bring him here." He said, "You answer me this question." He said, "You're a Buddhist monk. You should know these things." He said, "What is heaven and what is hell?" And he said, "If you don't give me a good enough answer, I'll cut your head." And he showed him his sword. And so the Buddhist monk, he just looked at him and he said, "Son, I wouldn't waste my breath on a pig like you." He took his sword out and he was about to cut his head off. And he said, "My son, this is hell." He said, "You're crashing round like an animal." He said, "Dominated by anger, lust, greed, pride." He said, "You're in hell every day." And then immediately, just some revelation passed over the samurai's face, and he dropped his sword, and he fell to his knees, and he began to cry, and the tears fell on the master's feet, and he felt the hand on his the back of his head, and he said, "And this, my son," he said, "this is heaven." So heaven is found in bowing down. Hold on to that thought. So Raghunath, unfortunately, the family was going to come into dire circumstances. This is known as Yoga Bhrashta. Yoga Bhrashta means to fall from a high place. So he's multimillionaire. What could possibly go wrong? Muslim government. And there was a Turkish man who used to own the land, who used to manage the land, but he didn't own it so well. He didn't manage it so well. So Nawab Hussein Shah got rid of him, and the Turkish man became very... this is 500 years ago in India, folks. We're talking about, you know, the Turkish. Turkish were there. Persians were there. Turks were there. That's why Madhvacharya spoke Turkish. And that's why Rupa Goswami spoke Farsi and Arabic. You know, these people were multi-skilled. So the Turkish man, he went to the Nawab Hussein Shah and he said, "You know what?" He said, "This man's not paying you all the rent. He's not paying you all the tax. And he's becoming very powerful. Did you know he has his own soldiers?" He sent the soldiers to kidnap his son to get back when he went to see a saint in South India. He has his own police force. "You better watch him. He's Hindu, after all. You and me, we know what these Hindus can be. If you want to keep dominance in this part of the country, you better make sure that he's removed from his position." So Raghunath, the father was away at the time, but Raghunath himself was arrested and he was taken to Goda, which in those days, before the British made Calcutta their capital, Goda was the capital. And as Muslim occupational governments sometimes do, they decided to torture him. This is Raghunath Das Goswami. This is our saint. Our saint. Haridas Thakur had already been tortured, right? He'd already been tortured. And now it's the time of Raghunath Das Goswami. It's tough being a devotee of the Lord, believe me. So Raghunath then gave an amazing speech all about the brotherhood of man under the one God. That God is one. Allah is one. Krishna is one. The one God is supreme. And we're all his children, therefore we're all brothers. That was a wonderful speech. I wish that that speech had been recorded. I wish I could have been there listening to that speech. That would have been a great speech for today's world. And at the end of that speech that Raghunath gave, the king, Nawab Hussain Shah, was crying. And he accepted Raghunath as a saint. This is the power of this young man's voice. So then soon after, Lord Nityananda came to... there's a local story. When I was being shown around, I don't know whether you've heard this story, that Lord Nityananda was in a boat and he was looking for a place to set up house with Janava and Vasudha. You heard this story? He's in a boat with a local zamindar and he's looking for land. And it's a leisurely afternoon and the zamindar is smoking a hookah, you know, hubbly bubbly. And Lord Nityananda is, you know, sort of looking, what about this place? And the landlord is saying, no, that's already taken. They're going down the river. What about that place there? No, already taken. Because if you can get a house by a river, that's kind of nice. He said, well, is there any place that you'll give me? He said, yes, I'll give you a place. So he took some straw from the bottom of the boat, lit it from his pipe. He said, look, wherever I throw this straw, he threw it into the water and laughed. So Lord Nityananda said, thank you very much. And at that moment, from the water, and if you haven't seen this phenomenon, you won't see it in the Thames, okay, or the Avon, but you'll see it in the Ganga. The Ganga is moving all the time. You can go down for a swim in the Ganges River, and you'll see the riverbank collapse and another riverbank rise up. It's all at the same. So as the burning straw touched the ground there, touched the water, up from the water rose a huge tract of land. And Lord Nityananda turned to him and said, thank you very much. Thank you very much. And the landlord said, no, no. He said, but he'd made his promise. So that was told to me by, what's his name, Murali Chaitanya, who's a local. Anyway, he guided us around Panihati. So Panihati, this place that we've heard about, is really just around the corner. You can walk it from Lord Nityananda's house. Lord Nityananda's house is still there, and some of the bricks that date back 500 years that Nityananda Prabhu actually lived in that house, you can still touch the bricks. Okay, definitely you should go there. You can do Prabhupada's birthplace, Nityananda's house, Panihati, all in the same day. And there's different trees under which he preached because he had been sent to preach. And so Lord Nityananda is surrounded there by hundreds of devotees. He's very successful in his preaching. They're all doing kirtan. And Raghunath appears on the outside of, he appeared on the outside. And of course, everybody knows the story. Lord Nityananda played with him and he said, a thief has come. You're trying to steal away Mahaprabhu. A thief has come. Come here and get your punishment. So he walked towards him, wondering what would happen. Because, of course, he'd heard all about Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and now he was with him. So Lord Nityananda put his feet on his head, at which, of course, the devotees all go, Jai. Let's do a Jai. Jai. Okay. Thank you. So easy to manipulate everybody in religious groups. So then he said, your punishment, he said, you're the son of a rich man. He said, your punishment is everybody's hungry and thirsty. You must get, you must feed them. So I want you to bring pots of sweet rice, flat rice with yogurt, savory, and sweet rice with date gourd and bananas. And you must serve everybody. So this they did. And this is the... Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not there, but he appeared to the intimate associates. So that's that painting in the prasadam room when you go and have prasadam. You'll see Lord Nityananda is there, Raghunath is there, all the devotees are there, down by the river. That place is still there. We now have that spot, or we now have a spot by the river. And that, of course, that is a very nice temple being... developed there. But very beautiful spot. So this is called the place of punishment or the festival of punishment. We usually just say chipped rice festival, but It's called, locally, it's called Danda, Danda Mahotsav. Danda means punishment. So Lord Chaitanya appeared. And this is on, this festival is on the 13th day of the bright moon of Jyeshta. He asked Lord Nityananda, I've tried to be with Lord Chaitanya, please give me your blessings. And Lord Nityananda said, very soon we will be with Chaitanya. So then, again, Raghunath Das Goswami, how long have we got? 9 o'clock? 9 o'clock. Again, he tries to escape. There's a theme here developing. So his father has patched it up with the Nawab through Raghunath's agency. But still the father doesn't realize who he's got. This is a common thing. It's a very common story that the fathers don't often realize their Krishna conscious children. Hiranyakashipu is an example. Okay. But also the father of Saint Francis of Assisi. The father of Thomas Aquinas. When there's a saint in the family, definitely the father doesn't realize who he's got. Because the fathers want their children to be like them. That's what you do. Isn't it, Sutapa? Your father wants you to go into a job like you. Okay, like he does. Now what's all this? You know, you can, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. You can go, but not too much. Okay? So here's Govardhan Majumdar. He's also telling his son, you can go see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but not too much. You must come back and do everything. You're married now. Take over the family business. I'm getting old. Your mother's getting old. Think of your mother. Think of your mother. If you were to go away and become a sadhu, you'd break her heart. So all these things parents do, don't they? I like you, Hare Krishna, but not too much. It's just too much religion. So the mother was joking. She said, the only way you'll be able to keep him here is if you tie him up with a rope. And the father said, well, maybe that's a good idea. Okay. So Yadunandan Acharya was another family priest. And the young lad went with him to perform some rituals. And it was just on the edge of the jungle. So he just said, can I go somewhere, do something for a moment? He said, yes, all right, make sure you come back. And he slipped away into the jungle. So he walked all the way from his home to Jagannath Puri. It's a huge distance. He covered the distance in 12 days. He was sometimes walking 30 miles a day through the jungle. And he only had 3 meals in 12 days. And as soon as he got to Puri, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, all right, I would like you to serve under Swarup Damodar, who was his secretary. Swarup Damodar was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's secretary all the time he was in Puri. And so then he said, you are to be known as Swarup Damodar Raghu. Or Swarup Damodar's Raghu. And so in effect, Raghunath is now the assistant secretary to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What a position to be in. So for a few days, he just ate the remnants from Lord Chaitanya's plate. And then he thought, no, this is too much. I should do something more. So he began begging. And for quite some time, he wouldn't speak to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. He'd reached such a level in his humility that he didn't want to presume to speak to Lord Chaitanya. He would only speak to Lord Chaitanya through his servant, Govinda. He would ask Govinda to ask him a question, or ask Govinda to get an instruction. And eventually, I think was it 3 years? 3 years passed like this. And eventually, one day he went to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or he asked Govinda, please give me an audience with the Lord. I want to hear something from him. So Lord Chaitanya said, you're doing perfectly well under Swarup Damodar. All the instructions are coming to you. He said, but if you want to hear from me, I will tell you the following. So then he gives Raghunath 4 instructions. Now these 4 instructions were different from the instructions he gave to Rupa, which was different than the instructions he gave to Sanatan. And that's why we have the 6 Goswamis as emblems of different aspects of Lord Chaitanya's desires for the world. So he told them, he said, don't talk like a materialist. It's not that he was, but he said, don't talk like a materialist or hear materialistic people talking. Don't eat palatable food and don't wear fashionable clothing. Don't expect honor from anyone, but give honor and respect to everyone else. Always chant the holy name of Krishna, and within your mind, render service to Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Okay? So these are the instructions he was given. So in the meantime, what had happened was that Govardhan knew of someone called Shivananda Sena. Shivananda Sena. And he said, well, my son is obviously hanging out with Shivananda Sena. Shivananda Sena was going to Puri, and I know that they went together. But they didn't, of course. So he convinced him. So they settled that up. And the father said, well, Shivananda Sena met with the parents, and the parents said, well, look, he's with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but at least the mother's going crazy with worry. Can you at least make sure that he has a cook, two servants, and he's got enough money so that he's eating well? So they sent all those with them. So Raghunath Das, he was using the money to cook twice a month for Lord Chaitanya, who he'd invited to dinner at his home. So after 3 years, Lord Chaitanya had a Govardhan Shila, a stone from Govardhan Hill. And he gave that to Raghunath. On another occasion, actually, he'd given him a big Tulsi garland. And Raghunath took that home and worshipped that. So there's a little interplay between Lord Chaitanya and Raghunath that he gave him gifts. Giving gifts. So he gave him a Govardhan Shila. And he also... Now, please correct me. Who knows? The one account, he gave him a little necklace of Gunjamala, which is red and black beads. And another place says he gave him a small garland of conch shells, necklace of conch shells. Jiva, do you know? I always heard Gunjamala. Yeah? I'd always heard Gunjamala. Okay. Thank you for that. A Gunjamala represented, it was red and black beads. Poisonous beads, actually. Everyone, you should know these things. But the tiny red and black beads, they look no bigger than sort of a big green mung dal. But one half is red, one half is black. So that's gunja, not ganja. That's something else. Okay? That's definitely poisonous. But these gunja beads, so you string them, wash them, string them, and they represent Radharani, and the Govardhan Hill, of course, represents Krishna. So he took them. But now we go to almost indescribable levels of renunciation. And the thing is that if you have, let's say, a favorite jumper, anybody think of a favorite? Think of your favorite jumper that you're not wearing. Okay. Now, do you have any physical connection to that jumper? It's just at home somewhere in the wardrobe or in the drawers. You know, it's external to you. It's not you. It's just your jumper, right? So in the same way, if you're an eternally liberated soul who's already on the spiritual platform, relishing their relationship with Krishna, your spiritual body has become activated, and your material body is really just like a jumper. And as much as you don't think about your jumper when you're wearing other clothing, in the same way, Raghunath Das didn't think about his body. It's just a jumper made of flesh. So that is why he gave up eating. He didn't quite give up eating, but he was living on buttermilk, mostly buttermilk. And of course, another time, of course, we know the story of he was begging outside the Jagannath temple and taking only the food that the cows would not eat. Usually they how many people they cook for every day? They cook for 20,000 people every day. Can you imagine? You know, we hear stories of Parashuram down in London cooking for 2,000 people a day, and everybody goes, wow. Because it is a wow, cooking for 2,000 people, you know. Anytime they ask me to cook for 5 people, I'm thinking, oh, sure, that's a big... I'm a man, you know, we don't do that kind of thing. You know, cook for 5 people. Cooking for 2,000 people. Cooking for 20,000 people. 20,000 people. You imagine the level of organization required for that. Of course, here we do it at Janmashtami. How many burners do we need to cook for 35,000 people? 15. 15 or 20 burners with big, big pots like this. Pots that you could jump inside. It's the pot that you always see the missionary inside in the African cartoons, you know. We've got pots bigger than that. So 20,000 people. So there is some wastage. But it's placed in a prasadam area and all the animals come to eat. Except when the rice gets old, it gets green, mildew, you know, and no one wants to eat that. Even the cows don't eat it. But Raghunath would take that, he would wash it, and he would eat that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to him one day and he said, what is this? What is this luxury? He said, you're having a feast? You're having a feast without me? You used to invite me for feasts. Now you don't invite me anymore? And he snatched some rice and threw it in his... Okay. So then he was chanting 22 hours a day. 22 hours each day. And he was paying obeisances to 2,000 devotees. But other people used to come and see him too. Big, big intellectuals used to come and see him. He was not a Brahmin from a Brahmin family. He was a Kayasta, which is halfway between a Brahmin and a Kshatriya. But he was attracting all these intellectuals because in Indian philosophy, it's not simply an intellectual understanding of something, you know, the semantics of it. It's whether you've actually imbibed it, internalized it, and you're manifesting the symptoms. And when you study Indian philosophy, you know that you'll also get a list of symptoms by which you can tell whether a person is animated by the spirit or still clinging to, you know, the jumper, the woolly jumper of flesh and blood. So they would come to see him because he had a reputation. But he didn't want people to come and see him because he was reputed. So he felt that he had to bow down to them. So he was bowing down, bowing down, bowing down. And you'd think, what is this bowing down? 2,000 times a day? I don't know if I could do it. No, we probably couldn't. But Raghunath did, and that's why we're talking about him today. Otherwise, we would be talking about you. We were talking about him. So he was in Puri for 16 years. And towards the end of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's manifestation in this world, which ended in 1534, he had told him to go to Vrindavan, where he'd already sent Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And he stayed for a few more years. He couldn't leave his Sarup Damodar because he'd been with his master for such a long time. And then Sarup Damodar passed away. But Raghunath Das was feeling such separation. He said, when I get to Vrindavan, I'm just going to jump off Govardhan Hill. He said, I can't. How can I survive in this world without the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Just imagine, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had been personally with him for years. Sarup Damodar, the most confidential associate of the Lord, had been with him for years. And now he's got nobody in the world. And he's going to Vrindavan. He doesn't really know Rupa and Sanatan, but he's heard of them. And he just thinks, I'm going to Vrindavan and there I'll give up my life. I can't stay with the absence of my Lord and my Lord and Master, Sarup Damodar. And so he goes. And he's 40 years old at this time. And he meets with Rupa and Sanatan. And even though he's crushed by disappointment and despair, they manage to persuade him that there's still life after your master leaves. There's still life. You must go on. Don't, you know, your body is not yours. Your life is not yours. You should serve your master in the way that he's requested. So why don't you do this? Why don't you recite the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because you lived with him for such a long time, why don't you tell us about him every day? Because surely every day you'll find something new to speak on. So for 3 hours every day, Raghunath Das talks about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. 3 hours every day for the rest of his life. You see? So the reason why this is important for us is because everything that Raghunath Das said ends up in this beautiful, glorious book known as the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And that's why we have, through Raghunath Das, that's why we have the pastimes. Because his disciple was Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, right? Whose disappearance or appearance it is today? Disappearance is today. Everybody's disappearance? Isn't that amazing? So he went to live in Radhakund. Si Radha Kundam Giribaram Aho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shigurung Tang Natosmi. So he went to live in Radhakund and he met Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who was an initiated disciple of Nityananda. And there he wrote different things. He wrote the Stavamala, or sometimes known as the Stavavali. Manashiksha is a poem there. The Dhanakeli Chintamani and the Mukta Charita. Now, just in brief, unfortunately, in brief, Raghunath Bhatta, he asked for his name not to be broadcast, not to be included, so we don't find him in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is a great shame, really, because had we known more about Raghunath Bhatta, it would have been more inspiration. But the inspiration that we gain from Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, whose disappearance day is also today, must be that we know his humility exercised him in such a way that he didn't want his activities to be recorded. What we do know about him is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu really valued his singing, his cooking, and he said his recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam was unparalleled in the Vaishnava community. So he was, he had a famous father who did understand what it meant to be a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because his father was Tapan Mishra, who was a great friend of Chandrasekhar Acharya. And they lived in Benares, where they moved from Bengal. So Lord Chaitanya went to Benares to see Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar, and Raghunath was only 9. This is the story I was thinking about. So Tapan Mishra, he lived in his house, and Chandrasekhar, he lived in the house of Chandrasekhar and took his meals with Tapan Mishra. Raghunath was only 9 years old, but still there was a great affection, and he washed Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dishes. This was his first seva, touched his lotus feet. Can you imagine? 9 years old and you get a chance to touch Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet. So when he was 20, okay, so 11 years went by. When he was 20, he met Ram Das on his way to Bengal. And Ram Das was traveling to Jagannath Puri. So he said, well, why don't we go together to see Lord Chaitanya? So there he stayed with Lord Chaitanya, and he learned to cook from the devotees. And he learned to cook so well that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said his cooking was like nectar. But he was there for 8 months, and Lord Chaitanya said, go home, don't get married. See, it was a different instruction here. Go home, don't get married if you don't need to. Study Srimad Bhagavatam under some great souls. And then he gave him his own personal neck beads. Lord Chaitanya took his neck beads off and gave them to Raghunath. So he looked after his elderly parents because, of course, they were devotees also. Tapan Mishra was a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, look after your father and mother. And he looked after them for another 4 years until they passed away and then went to Puri. And again, he was only there for another 8 months. See, in the life of a sannyasi, 8 months is an important period, because 4 months is chaturmasya. There's different things that you do during those 4 months that you don't do during the 8 months. So came to the end of the 8 month period, and he said, all right, now what I would like you to do, he said, I'd like you to continue chanting and reading Srimad Bhagavatam, chant the holy name of Krishna, and go to Vrindavan. Put yourself under Rupa and Sanatana. You see what's happening? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is experiencing his ecstasies in Puri, but he's starting the movement under the guidance of Rupa and Sanatana, which of course is the Vishva Vaishnav Raj Sabha. And it was an organized movement, actually. Don't think that it was just some Goswamis living under a tree. They had followers and they had divisions in the society. And there was a division for Bhagavatam, division for defeating oppositional philosophy. There was a division for deity worship, the division for honoring devotees with titles according to their scholarship and devotion. And so this is a very important understanding. So he said, if you put yourself under Rupa and Sanatana, Krishna will quickly bestow his mercy on you. So then he gave him something more. He gave him betel nut that had been offered to Jagannath and a huge Tulsi garland. Yes, that's the story. So then Raghunath Bhatta, he looked after these as holy items. So then he went to Vrindavan and he surrendered to the deity, to Rupa Goswami's deities of Radha Govinda. And eventually he had his own wealthy disciples build a temple for Radha Govinda. But he personally made ornaments for the deities, Raghunath Bhatta. He made shark-shaped earrings. He personally made them, hammered the silver. He hammered the flute. He made the flute for Krishna. And it said that he could sing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Every verse he could sing in 3 or 4 tunes. And it was very captivating. And his kirtan, when he led kirtan for the devotees, it was the most uplifting kirtan. And that's all we know about it. We know that sometimes the kirtan was interrupted when his body started to shake and tears sprang from his eyes. We know that, but very little else. So the disciple of all these, Krishnadas, Kaviraj Goswami, he was, just 2 minutes, he was born in to a family of doctors. So he was also a very intelligent boy. He was his father was Bhagiratha, his mother was Sunanda, and his brother was Shamananda. Unfortunately, something happened. Do you remember what happened with Shamananda, his brother? He argued about the position of Lord Nityananda, the ontological position. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we think he's special, but Nityananda, we're not too sure. He behaves erratically. He's not... He doesn't seem to be on the same level as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I have faith in Chaitanya, but I don't have faith in Nityananda. And Miniketan Ram was very angry at that. And then Krishnadas rejected his own brother. So if you can't accept Nityananda, I don't accept you. So the next big event that happens in his life is he has a dream. He has a dream. And in the dream, which is actually a mystical vision, he sees a beautiful cowherd boy come, who's white in color, wearing blue silk. And he's surrounded by other cowherd boys. And he understands in the dream, this is Balaram / Nityananda himself. So then he's pointing, in the dream he's pointing like this. The figure in the dream is pointing. And then he says, go to Vrindavan. So he left Bengal. He said, go to Vrindavan, for there you will attain all things. So he left Bengal and he went to Vrindavan. He was initiated by Raghunath Das Goswami, who was already living there. And eventually, many years later, when there was already a book about the early biography of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but not so much teachings, not so much philosophy, and not so much of the later pastimes. So a book was needed. They needed a book. But by this time, Krishnadas Kaviraj was 90 years old, and he could hardly see. So they needed a book about Chaitanya, and they knew that he might be the person to do it. So he brought in the diaries of Murari Gupta for the early pastimes. Murari Gupta was a doctor who was living in Navadvip. They brought in the accounts from Swarup Damodar, and they brought in all the other things that Krishnadas had heard from conversations with Raghunath Das Goswami. So, and also Swarup Damodar had left some diaries, some written words as well. But then Krishnadas Kaviraj, as he writes the Chaitanya Charitamrita for the pleasure of the devotees and the strength of the new movement that had been created, he says, I've now become too old, I'm disturbed by invalidity. When I'm writing, my hands are trembling. I can't remember anything. I can't hear properly. I can't see properly. He said, still, I write. Still, I'm writing. And this is a very great wonder to me. A wonder. So then he produces these wonderful books, Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is the life and soul of the Vaishnav community that follows Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ever since. And of course, in the it's split into three sections, in the Adi Leela, the Madhya Leela, and the Antya Leela. And the Adi Leela is the, you know, he sets out the theological identity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates and his life up to the time he takes sannyas. In the Madhya Leela, he talks about Lord Chaitanya traveling for several years around India, South India, his discussions with important devotees like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Prakashan under Saraswati. He talks about Rathyatra. And in Madhya Leela, we also find the original instructions to Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, from which Nectar of Devotion come and from which Hari Bhakti Vilas come, from these instructions at Prayag and Banaras, Varanasi. And in the Antya Leela, we find the final pastimes and Lord Chaitanya's ecstasies. We find that whole section in Puri. So we're lucky that we get the Chaitanya Charitamrita at all, because, there was no printing, and the writing was sometimes severely challenged. You just imagine, Krishnadas Kaviraj has written one copy. Somebody else has to write a copy. Another Brahmin writes another copy. They do it in shifts. There's really only three books for some time. Then there's five, then there's eight. And but you need people then to distribute the books. You need people to go out and talk about the books, tell everybody they should come and hear the book being read to them. So then Krishnadas Kaviraj trains the three great Vaishnavas, the Prabhu Trayi, Naradam Das Thakur, and Shamananda, and Srinivas. And they travel and they distribute the knowledge of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So thank you very much. That is a little presentation on the three great devotees who we're honoring today. And I believe today is also, we're celebrating Dashera, which means bonfire in the night, which means a demon will be killed tonight. He may only be made of cardboard, huh? But you have to use your imagination. This is a great festival in the north of India. In the south of India, we have the killing of, what's his name? Satyabhama and Krishna, they kill Banasura, yeah. And in the north, it's more celebrated as Dashera. So both involve burning things, both involve fireworks, both involve great danger. So stay safe, enjoy the festival. There'll be lots of people here today. And see if you can, for Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Raghunath Bhatt, and Raghunath Das Goswami, see if you can find three Vaishnavas today and bow down on your knees to them. We used to do it. We used to say to each other, please accept my humble obeisances, and then bow down. I don't think we do it so much, so often. So see if you can do that 3 times to someone today. All right? Hare Krishna. Have a wonderful day. Hare Krishna.